Welcome to Lessons in Leadership. I'm Steve Adubato with my colleague, Mary Gamba. We did not coordinate our clothing today. We don't usually do that, do we? It's just, I don't know.
No, and every once in a while, I'll have my gray blazer on, and you've got on gray. I've got a maroon blazer. So I just think it's really funny. The universe definitely aligned.
Yeah, so we're talking about fashion for a half hour. No, we are not. We're talking about leaders in law, and we kick off the program with Vito A. Gagliardi, Jr., Managing Partner, Porzio Bromberg Newman, and also President, CEO of Porzio Government Affairs. Vito, my friend, good to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks for the privilege of being with you.
You got, hey, Vito, do this for us. You went into the law a few years back because you have a passion for what?
It was really history. As a young man, very young, quite frankly, grade school, read a lot about history, American history, and it seemed to me Lincoln, Jefferson, Madison, all of these people doing significant things were lawyers. And so I decided not so much that's what I wanted to do, but by the time I was seven, I was certain that's what I was going to do, and I'm blessed to be doing it.
Now, fast forward a few years in the business, and your area of expertise, let everybody know, is?
Sure. Education law and employment law on the defense side, management side.
All these years later, your passion for the law right now is what, given these incredibly difficult challenges and uncertain times for law firms across this country?
Well, as has been the case throughout our history, ironically enough, lawyers play an important role in various aspects of our lives. It even fascinated me when you watch the news, how many stories are about lawsuits and lawyers and the impact of the judicial branch of our government.
Absolutely.
And right now, for better or for worse, we have to acknowledge that lawyers and the judicial branch of government are playing a very significant role in the context of our constitutional democracy.
It is not a boring time to be in law. Mary, pick it up.
Vito, what have you found to be the major difference between when you went into law and the young leaders, the young adults that are choosing to go into law today? Have the attributes changed? Have the skills changed in terms of what you need to be successful in the legal profession?
Well, I think generationally, the interest in sacrificing so much of your life in order to be successful at this profession has diminished. That is to say, and not just for lawyers, but doctors and other professionals, the amount of time you have to devote, not just to the study, the academic aspect of it, but the act of being a professional and devoting time, weekends, nights, whatever, there's less interest in that sort of sacrifice. And I don't say it in a derisive way that it's necessarily bad, but it is a fact that it's unrealistic to expect that the individuals who graduate from law school today are willing to throw themselves at the profession and make themselves whole by working and putting other things to the side the way mine was. There are exceptions to every rule, but that's the way I respond to your question in a general way.
I had a quick follow-up to that. How much of a role did artificial intelligence, AI, how much does that play in these young adults, their ability not to cheat the system? We don't want to cheat in law or in the
and
process of
media.
Getting there. But
Mary,
how much is it?
Media. And social media.
Right. But I'm getting to the how much of it has made it not easier, but now they have a tool that if I need to find some legal precedent for something, I'm not going to the legal library. I'm going to go through a bunch of books. I can go to ChatGPT, type it in, and at least have a start, no?
A few years ago, a medical professional in the area of mental health, particularly for children, wrote a book. And the name of the book was How to Raise Well-Adjusted Children in the Age of Instant Everything. And the age of instant everything naturally touches on our profession. The individuals who are lawyers now didn't go to school with AI. So the answer to your question really can't be found for about two or three more years. But what you have to balance, I think, we're talking about work-life balance. Now let's just talk about work-work balance. Naturally, you need to take advantage of the technology to make you efficient. Clients will insist on it. And the competitive aspect of litigation will insist on it. But you want to make sure you're not trading that for laziness. There's still has to be room for creativity and intellect. And one thing that I don't think artificial intelligence is going to change is this. A lawyer that I respect a great deal, he's passed away. His name was Mike Cole. He was chief counsel to Governor Kaine. I worked for him for a while. His wife, Janie LeVecchio, was on the Supreme Court. He taught me that the most important thing that lawyers bring to the table is their judgment. Clients will dump a complicated set of facts in their laps and ask the lawyer this question: what do you think I should do? And if you can't answer that question on a regular basis, you are not very valuable to your clients. And so artificial intelligence is a tool, but it's not going to replace that critical skill that lawyers have to bring to the table when they're asked to solve problems.
Vito, let me follow up. And Mary, I'm sorry. I thought you were also going to combine social media and AI, but you went in a very strong direction there. But I do want to follow up on this, and I'll tell you why. Vito, I have no problem saying you and I are, quote, old school guys, all about relationships. Your dad, an extraordinary public servant in the state of New Jersey. Look up Vito Gagliardi Sr. You'll see who I'm talking about. Your dad was a relationship guy, so was my dad. You and I are those kind of professionals. This phone, the ability to text. I said to our son the other day, did you talk to so-and-so about that job opportunity? He said, yeah, I talked to him. I said, you talked to him? He goes, yeah, we were texting. And I said, texting's not talking. He said, come on. Question, Vito. We're not here to talk about the younger generation. This is the way they are. But the reality is, you and I both know that deals get done, relationships get built, things move forward in large part because of human interaction and relationships. How much harder is it for younger people in general to engage in human communication, not simply texting? Yeah. What deals do you work out with a text or an email?
So experienced lawyers will tell you, as we were talking a moment ago about balancing efficiency with professionalism, will tell you that yes, for quick court appearances,
Yep.
for certain depositions, doing it online is so much more efficient. Get in the car, drive
Absolutely.
to the courthouse, whatever. But when you went to court for those court appearances or when you were regularly taking depositions in person, the conversations while you were waiting in the hallway, sitting in the courtroom, those sort of conversations often lead to two things: more expedited resolution of differences, and as you are just pointing out, the building of relationships. And
And
certainly,
trust, and trust.
trust, I think, of course, is part of a good relationship. And so, in my 35 years or so of practicing law, I'll tell you what hasn't changed, even with the prevalence of basically all the knowledge the world has literally in your pocket. The one thing that hasn't changed is this: the most consistent way to get new clients is word of mouth, what people say about you. Now, they may be able to look things up, but of course, clients love it when someone that they trust says, here's who I use to solve this
That's right.
problem. You should reach out for this person. And so I try to encourage younger lawyers, just as you're pointing out, to recognize that dynamic has not changed. The building of relationships leads to successful outcomes, leads to enhancing your reputation, leads to more success in the marketplace.
Mary, you and I have obsessed over at our not-for-profit production company, the Caucus Educational Corporation, in our leadership development. It is relationships and everything that it takes to build relationships. And I don't see how you separate great leadership from building strong relationships. Hey, Vito, I want to thank you and the team at Porzio for joining us. And we wish you and your team all the best. Thank you, Vito.
Been a pleasure. Thank you.
You got it. We'll be right back right after this. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Bucino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
At the Coriell Institute for Medical Research, we choose New Jersey because it's a great place to work and it's a great place to live. We work on understanding disease, but also curing diseases through drug development and clinical trials. This is such a central state and it's such a rich state in resources for medical research that it allows us to do the research that we need to do. This is New Jersey. It all happens here.
We are honored to be joined once again by our good friend Keith Banks, former vice chair of a little bank called Bank of America, and also the chair of the board of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network Board. Hey, Keith, good to see you, my friend.
Always good to be here, Steve. Thank you.
Do you think I have to and should disclose that we are golf partners when we play? Should I disclose that? Or do you try to deny that?
I think you just did, so I think we can move beyond that.
Okay, hold on. You ready? This is about leadership, and you've had incredible leadership roles, both in the bank at Bank of America and also the new bank, Liberty Bank of New Jersey, we'll talk about in a second, but also at HMA and Hackensack Meridian Health. You didn't expect this question, the connection between leadership and golf.
There is none. No. Look, I think the biggest difference is when you're on a golf course, you're depending on one person and one person only. That's you. And which is good and bad. One of the biggest transitions you have to make when you move into a leadership position, and I went from being an individual contributor, I was a portfolio manager, I was an equity research analyst. So it was kind of like golf. If I got it done, I got it done. If I didn't, I didn't. And it was on me. The biggest transition when you go into leadership is you are now as good as the people around you. And you are now, you know, leading other leaders and leading other teammates. So it's a very different dynamic, and it takes a while to get used to if when you're in your first role in that regard.
I like to ask that question of people who play golf a lot. Let's just say this. Keith and I enjoy golf. We don't have the level of confidence playing golf that we have in our business life. Is that a fair assessment, Mr. Banks?
That's a very fair assessment.
Okay.
And actually a kind assessment.
Yeah. Okay. So how about this? More than a few years at Bank of America, also on a whole variety of boards, difference between being in an executive position at a corporation, organization, or a nonprofit, and being in board leadership. What's the biggest difference, Keith Banks?
There is a big difference, Steve. So when you're actually on the leadership team, you're on the field, you're playing the game, you're putting the points on the board, and you're accountable for the day in and day out operations of that business. When you're on a board, you are on the sidelines, right? You are there to help the coach being the CEO, help the coaches, assistant coaches, his or her leadership team. And you got to really look to bring your expertise to bear to help them in that regard, your experiences. But you also have to be willing to challenge and push back when you think there are issues that need, further drilling down on. One of the biggest risks to a CEO, and I've talked to people about this, is people stop asking you the questions you should be asked and stop telling you the things you need to hear. And one of the roles I think the chair of the board plays is that person has to be willing and able to tell the CEO and other members of leadership those things in their best interest and in the best interest of the institution.
Let me also share that at Hackensack Meridian Health, the CEO, Bob Garrett, been with us many times. Check out our website. You'll see past interviews with Bob. And Bob and I talk leadership all the time, as well as he does with Keith and Keith's role as chairman of the board. Hey, Keith, you told me, I don't know, a year ago or so, you were going to slow down. You used the word retirement. You did. Now, yeah, you're laughing because beyond your golf game, you're not only chairman of the board at Hackensack Meridian Health, but Liberty Bank of New Jersey. You and a group of folks are engaged in a startup of a new bank. That doesn't sound like retirement to me. What the heck is Liberty Bank in New Jersey, and how challenging to lead a startup?
Yeah, talk about the antithesis of where I came from, right? I came from working for, I actually worked for J.P. Morgan for 16 years as well.
A little small company?
Yeah, so I went from being the second largest bank in the country to a de novo or startup bank. But no, it's a lot of fun. I had done this a number of years ago with a different group of friends, but a great group of people approached me, people I consider friends, people I like and trust. And what they recognized is the number of true community banks in New Jersey has shrunk dramatically. In fact, an interesting statistic, over the last 20 years, the number of banks based in New Jersey has dropped by 60%. And especially in that lower, what I call the community bank tier. And so there's a real need at that level. And think when I say that, think businesses with revenues below $100 million. So they're kind of under the radar screen, you know, typically of the bigger banks and even the larger regionals. So we're going to go in, we're working hard to get this bank open. Our goal is to have it open by the fourth quarter of this year. We're working with the FDIC now on the application process, and we're excited about it.
Those are the feds who regulate banks, right, Keith?
That's correct. And they've got to ultimately approve. If they don't approve you, you do not become a bank. So it's quite a, as it should be, quite a rigorous process, and we're well in the midst of that as we speak.
And one of Keith's colleagues in starting up this bank is Tom Screever, our good friend from who leads a law firm with Kevin O'Toole, who's been on with us many times as well. We'll be talking to Tom Screever as well. Hey, Keith, let me switch gears for a second. If you, as a leader, could do it over again, one aspect of your leadership, I'm doing this all the time. I'm like, why did I do that 10 years ago? Why did I have that approach? I turned this person off. We lost this person because I didn't handle it well. I didn't manage this crisis with the level of even temper that I should have had. What about you?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Steve, and it's not, I'm not going to say it in a way that I would do it again, but what I really appreciate,
differently.
Yeah. I mean, what I really came to appreciate when I was retiring, because we announced it and I had about 2 months, so I got a chance to really say goodbye to a lot of the people I'd worked with and people who came to me. And what was interesting is, you know, I expected them to talk about things we had done, you know, from a business results standpoint or whatever it was. And these are people at all different levels. Almost everyone, what they talked about was the impact that I had on their lives or they had on my life as people. And I think when you get caught up, and especially if you're in a for-profit business and you're running hard and you've got results, you can sometimes, as a leader, forget you're working with people who have families who are, and I think my advice to leaders is never underestimate the impact you have on people. And people would bring up stories, quite frankly, I even forgot because it was many years ago and, you know, you're managing thousands of people. But it just reinforced to me, and I think I always try to conduct myself in an appropriate way and always recognize, you know, be empathetic and recognize on the other side, you had to push people, but they're people. And you got to recognize, you know, they got a whole thing going on too. But that's something that I wish I'd had that even burned even better into my brain. You know, so everything you do through the lens of people first, results second. And you can have both. They're not mutually exclusive, which is the good part.
AI is never going to... Artificial intelligence, social media will never replace that, will it, Keith?
No, that's one thing that you only we can bring to that party, and it's an important aspect. And it's what keeps people. I mean, they always say, you know, people leave because of not the company, their boss, their immediate person, the immediate person who has the impact on their lives. And so, and I've seen it myself. I've had a chance to work in some, you know, organizations with great cultures. I chair an organization that has a great culture, Hackensack Meridian Health. And it makes a difference. You see it in retention. You see it in, you know, and if people are happy and they feel good and they're energized, you unleash them. Steve, they do. It's amazing what people will do for you at that point. So it's incredibly important.
To finally, to Keith's point, I read with all the leadership books I read, write, try to think about, there was a great leadership quote that sticks with me, that people don't leave organizations, they leave people. And I was like, wait a minute. So that means when so-and-so left, they left me? Meaning, again, it's more complex than that, I know.
Right.
But I won't get on my soapbox. But to all those who left our organization because of something I did or didn't do, I acknowledge that. And the bottom line is this. You got to keep working at it. and you don't always get it right, and there is no perfect leadership. It's just constant improvement. And that spirit, Keith Banks in retirement is doing more things than most people do in a lifetime. And he's also a great friend and a partner. Keith, I wish you and your team all the best, not just at HMH, but also with the new bank. All the best.
I appreciate it, Steve. Thank you.
Thanks, my friend. That's Keith Banks. We'll be right back after this.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
At the Coriell Institute for Medical Research, we choose New Jersey because it's a great place to work and it's a great place to live. We work on understanding disease, but also curing diseases through drug development and clinical trials. This is such a central state, and it's such a rich state in resources for medical research that it allows us to do the research that we need to do. This is New Jersey. It all happens here.
Welcome back to Lessons in Leadership. Steve Adubato with Mary Gamba. Hey, Mary, when we have some time to talk and we're not interviewing people, we always ask, hey, what should we be talking about? At some point, we'll be talking about this book, Peace in Every Step of Mindfulness in Everyday Life. This has been recommended by Mary Gamba. Who is it?
Thich Nhat Hanh is how you pronounce it.
That's the author. And also the foreword is from the Dalai Lama. Tease this, so we'll do it at a later point. Why did you even recommend this? Because I'm going in a totally different direction in this.
Yeah, for those that follow along on Lessons in Leadership, every year I have a theme, and this year's theme, I don't know if I could say it on television, but pretty much it's just do it. Just let things go. Just go for it. Just, right, last year was all about intentionality. This year it's about letting yourself choose your destiny. And I did a Google, said, all right, what types of books are there? I listened to some Dalai Lama stuff. That was a little bit too hoagie for me. So I found Thich Nhat Hanh, and it's just about grounding yourself, being present, being aware, and being in the moment, and knowing that as human beings, we just heard Keith Banks talk about it just a moment ago. We are all human beings at the end of the day. So we have to treat everyone with kindness, with respect, and just with a degree of empathy. And that's what Thich Nhat Hanh talks about.
All right, I changed my mind. We were going to talk about this book, Original Sin, and...
We've got time. We've got all day.
No, now you got me into the peace and is every step thing. So the reason I want to talk about this book at a later point is because it's a Jake Tapper book. And my colleague, media colleague, and Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson, they wrote the book all about, oh my God, I couldn't believe that they covered up that President Biden wasn't cognitively all that. Wow, geez, you didn't see that? Point being, at a later point, we'll talk about leadership and who gets to tell the leader in the hot top position it's time to step down and what happens when you don't confront that reality. But Mary, sorry, I'm going back to peace, right? So truth be told, as we're taping today, we'll always see things later. Mary, I was in a cranky, not as you're likely to do right now. Yesterday,
I'm frozen.
You're not frozen.
My screen froze.
Okay, so I was a cranky with Mary yesterday. If you really asked me why, I couldn't tell you. Something was in my head, and I couldn't get to where I wanted to be. And this morning, I'm in a cranky mood as we're taping. And also, I have these rocks in my pocket. People are like, where's he going with this? This one in this rock says, have gratitude. I talk about it all the time. I had absolutely no gratitude this morning, meaning I'm feeling like unappreciated. Mary, what's the noise you make now?
Wah. Okay. Just wah.
Yeah. So that's how I'm feeling. And it's not really a Mary. It's family stuff and family doesn't appreciate me. Blah, 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 blah. And nobody cares. How the heck when you're feeling sorry for yourself? This is a leadership question. It's a life question. How when you're feeling sorry for yourself, not appreciated, and just in a bad place, how do you just snap your fingers and go, I'm going to find peace in every step?
If you look for outside factors, outside sources, outside energy to bring you peace, you will never be happy. What Thich Nhat Hanh talks about in his books, and it's funny, I picked this up at the train station the other day, and it's a pocket version, and I recommend everyone get it. We'll have Sylvester put it up because you can carry it around, throw it in your bag, and remind yourself. sometimes we could be jerks. Sometimes we could get so inside our head, we think, poor me, woe is me, instead of truly being grateful. So it's great that you have those rocks in your pocket.
Why can't you be woe is me?
We could be sitting here and we could just die today, right? Like, and it's so funny. In another segment, we'll talk a little bit more about it. But just the other day, I was at a memorial service for my great uncle who passed away this past February. Today happens to be his birthday. He would have been 104 years old today. He lived to the ripe old age of 103. And his wife is still alive, my Aunt Nancy, and she's 105. And literally everybody that got up and spoke on the microphone said Aldo was kind. That, and literally to be known as being kind and hardworking and all the other things, but there was that common theme. And that's what Thich Nhat Hanh talks about. You can't rely on other factors to make you be a good person. Because if you do, and if you're like, oh, they don't appreciate me, I do all this stuff, I raise all this money, I pay the bills, I put you through college,
Did you hear me
That's about
morning?
You.
Did you hear me this morning talking to my wife?
But it's everyone. Everyone does that. And instead of being, why don't you clean your room? Do you know how much I do for you? It's not fair. Number one, it's going to make you feel lousy on the inside. So part of how you're feeling and how you said how you started your day.
By the way, it's not about me because I'm not the only one who woke up like this today. Go ahead.
Right. And like I said, I've said it on the show a million times. Every day I wake up, I'm going to be passionate, positive, productive, and present. Every single day. And until I truly mean it, I don't swing my feet. And I'm not perfect. I was screaming yesterday and I was embarrassed because my 23-year-old son came home from work and was looking at me like, what is going on? What did I walk into?
Who were you screaming at?
You. Oh. I was screaming at you. And he, after the call, he came in and he was like, why? And I'm like, you want to know what? Well, I said, I don't know. And it was, and I said, sometimes you have a spirited discussion. You need to get things off of your chest. But until we could truly find peace in every step, peace in the moment, because we don't know if we're going to have another day on Earth. So we can't be jerks. And I'll use that word instead of a much worse, you know what. And we need to be present and we need to be good people because all the money in the world, all the jobs in the world, all the everything is not going to make up for being kind human beings.
Well, there you go. Mary, I don't really know what the comeback is to that. I think it's everything you said has value. I do think at times it's more complex than that. I do. Maybe it's not.
We'll talk in another segment. I know we have 30 seconds to go, but it does not need to be. And the more you read and the more that you take this into a practice, it does not need to be more complicated than that. It doesn't. You choose whether it gets more complicated than that or not.
I appreciate that. I will say this. When you're running a business and there's money in, okay. Alvin, I see you. Goodbye. All right. I'm done. I'm cured. Mary helped me. And I know more importantly, she helped a lot of people right there. This is a show on leadership, but it's also a show about life. We'll see you next time.
This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Bucino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
At the Coriell Institute for Medical Research, we choose New Jersey because it's a great place to work and it's a great place to live. We work on understanding disease, but also curing diseases through drug development and clinical trials. This is such a central state and it's such a rich state in resources for medical research that it allows us to do the research that we need to do. This is New Jersey. It all happens here.